It's almost a cliche. And certainly anybody who spent their time growing up around schools and universities and teaching in them as I did knows this cliche is often true, that people who live in books are often absent-minded. They don't necessarily pay attention to the world around them. They used to say about Benjamin Jowett, who is a famous scholar, translator of Plato, that he used to walk across the quad at Oxford and he would stop students along the way and say, "Excuse me, am I walking east or west?" And they would say, "West, Professor Jowett." He would say, "Ah, then I've had lunch." And I know that I suffer from this affliction. I knew it from the time I was a kid and I would stare for a half an hour into the refrigerator, my mother insisting that nothing would grow just from my staring in there until she finally would say, "What are you looking for?" And I would say, "Milk." And she would say, "Well, that's right in front of you." And I wondered, as I was thinking about this, which phrase I heard more. Why don't you look where you're going? Or why don't you listen to what we're saying to you? And I realized that my tendency towards obliviousness really works in two directions. One is I don't pay attention to what I see, and the other is I forget what I hear. Now, I know that when someone gets up and says this about themselves, people discount it. Mike, the rabbis are already laughing. They're not discounting it. They know this. In fact, I will demonstrate it with what happened this morning. Rabbi Sella asked everyone to sit down after the Reader's Kaddish. And I got up and I said, "What about Hagbah?" And he said, "Rabbi, I think we should call the bar and bat mitzvah up first." Now, I do this every week. I've done it for years. But I was daydreaming. God knows what I was thinking about. And demonstrating anew what frustrations my parents must have endured in raising me as I moved through the world unaware of what the world was doing as I was moving through it. I bring this up because this morning, the parsha is called Re'eh, which means look. And this actually is a very strange adjuration, a very strange command for the Jewish tradition. Because Judaism is actually much less about the visual sense than it is about the oral sense, the sense of hearing. God specifically says in the book of Devarim to the Jewish people, "You saw nothing at Horeb, but what you heard will last forever. You didn't see an image when I spoke to you out of the fire." Our entire tradition is based on the idea that what you see is less real than what you can't see. That's why we don't have a representation of God in the sanctuary, because the greatest reality is what I can't look at. But we can hear. Shema Yisrael. And the word Shema recurs over and over and over again in the book of Devarim. 92 times by one count, the word Shema is in there. And we all know that we had a portable culture, a culture that could be taken from land to land and place to place, that we didn't build giant cathedrals as a feast for the eye, but we always were a people of the book. It was what we heard, what we taught, and not what we saw. And so what seems like a commonplace thing, look. In fact, how often in English do you start sentences with that? Look, you say. What seems commonplace demands some explanation. What is it we're supposed to see in a tradition that always talks about what we're supposed to hear? What is it we're supposed to see in a tradition that says that what you see isn't as important Not even when you're looking at another person, what you see isn't as important as the intangible, untouchable, unseeable soul that resides within them. And I want to make two suggestions to you about what seeing is about in this morning's parsha. The first one is something that I learned doing the sort of thing that bookish, oblivious teenagers often do, at least some in my day, and that is, at some point, I became involved in tournament chess. And if you want to meet some interesting and eccentric characters, all I can suggest to you is you frequent chess tournaments. There are people who have this great gift for the game, even though they may have no gift for, say, talking to other human beings. There was one chess player I remember, I'll just give you, his first name was Kenny, who had this incredible facility of always knowing what time it was. You could come up to him in the middle of the day and say, what time is it? He'd go, 2:26. Fascinating, eccentric characters. He was also a remarkable chess player. And I soon learned that however good I got, I would never be a really, really top chess player, because there was one facility that a chess player has to have in order to reach the heights that I didn't have. And that is the ability to have a very specific sort of visual imagination. When you play chess, you have to say to yourself, okay, if I do this, he'll do that, I'll do this, he'll do that, I'll do this, he'll do that, then how will the board look? And you have to be able to see with the same clarity with which I can see you now, you have to be able to see what the board will look like after a series of exchanges. In the same way, if you want to test yourself, if you walk into a room and you can see what it will be like if all the furniture is rearranged, then you have that kind of visual imagination that you need to play a good game of chess. And it is a visual faculty. That is, you have to see it in your mind. That's why good chess players can play blindfold, because they see the board in their heads. And as you rearrange the board, they can still see it. Now let's relate this to Re'eh. When God says, see, I set before you a blessing and a curse, especially when we read this right before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, what's it saying? It's saying your actions have consequences. And you must be able to envision them in your life, or you will lead a life without blessing. You must be able to say, if I do this, then this will happen, and this will happen, and this will happen, and then I'll be in this position. When you raise a child, even though the child may be 3 years old, you have to say, if I raise my child this way, what will she be like when she's 25? That's what you have to do. You have to envision it. You have to see your child not only as a baby, not only as a toddler, not only as a teenager, not only as an adolescent, but as a grown-up. Because after all, as a wise rabbi of the last, well, the century before the last said, it is not our job to raise good children. It's our job to raise good adults. That's the point. You know, we're having a parenting conference on September 10th. I want to tell you the story I intend to open the conference with before we hear from Wendy Mogul. It's a great story, and it illustrates this beautifully. A boy comes to his mother and says, I want a piece of cake. And she says, you've had 5 pieces of cake. You may not have another piece of cake. He says, oh, please. She says, no. He says, please, please, please. She says, okay, okay, one more piece. And he says to her, you really have no willpower, do you? Now imagine what that boy is going to grow up into. This is a woman who does not envision, who doesn't practice Re'eh, Because a child who never hears no is a child without limits, who doesn't understand what no means in the world, who will not have the self-discipline when the external constraints are removed to be able to say no when he should say no, when she should say no. That's the first thing that re'e means. Re'e means you have to pay attention to what you do today because there is no human action that is without consequences. And it will all come back in one way or another. But I want to suggest also a second meaning to re'e. The second meaning to re'e comes from the Parsha also, where the Torah says, if there is a poor person among you, don't close your hand. And what strikes me about that verse is that it doesn't say if there are poor among you. That we would understand. It says if there is a poor person. In other words, every individual's poverty should be an offense to us. A single person. But as you know and as I know, it is easy not to see. I don't live in Los Angeles. I don't know about you. I don't live in Los Angeles. I live in Century City, Brentwood, Bel Air, Beverly Hills, and Westwood. I don't live in Los Angeles. And where I live, it's easy not to see. And Re'e is saying, you gotta see. You have to look. You may not close your eyes because of the first meaning of Re'e, which is closing your eyes has consequences too. However you believe, problems of poverty and homelessness, however you believe they should be dealt with. And I am not here, you know me, I am not here to suggest one means or another. The one way we know they cannot be solved is by pretending they don't exist. By closing our eyes. By refusing to see. And so, what Re'e is teaching us is that there is no sense that God gave us that isn't crucial to the moral life. What we hear, what we touch, what we say, what we smell, and what we see. And what we see. We're coming up on Rosh Hashanah. The word shana in Hebrew has a couple of meanings. Actually, it has a lot of meanings. One is, of course, year, Rosh Hashanah, the new year. But shana also means to repeat. That's why the Mishnah Torah of Rambam really means the second Torah, right? It is a distillation of the laws of the Torah, so we called it a repetition of the Torah. But shana, strangely enough, not only means repeat, it also means change. Lishanot is to change. So put those all together, and the question becomes, in the year ahead, what will you repeat, and what will you change? What will you ignore, and what will you see? What will you hear, and from whom will you turn away? This is our responsibility. It has been our responsibility for thousands of years. Not to make everything right, but not to be dishonest with ourselves about how much is wrong. Not to give every problem our attention, but to make sure that we don't turn away from the problems that we see because they're uncomfortable because they disturb the sometimes perfect complacency of our blessed lives. In the year ahead, I pray that we listen, but I also pray that we see, that we are not oblivious, that we do not turn away, that we understand the chain of causation that ends in help or in neglect, that we know that we are not given our blessings only to enjoy them, but to share them, so that others too may see that God has put before all of us bracha uklala, a blessing and a curse. And that as it has done for thousands of years, the Jewish people as individuals and as a people has chosen blessing for us, for Israel, and for all the world. Shabbat shalom.